I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday. I was about to say happy Friday because it's Friday for me and Seth. We're done for the next 10 days. Seth, you even a little longer. You realize you're not back for 2 weeks from today. Is how long you're gone for.
Yeah, but you know, 3 days of that is going to be I'm doing this mind and this brain and body scan for the NFL at the Cleveland Clinic. Mm. So I don't think I have any. I was looking at my schedule for that, and I don't think I have any appointments until in the afternoon. So maybe I'll just walk around the city of Cleveland and with an open mic and interview people. That'll be our show. Maybe I'll come back and I'll have my phone out and we'll. We'll give you Seth Payne's appraisal of Cleveland.
What do you want to know from somebody who lives in the city of Cleveland right now? What would you ask them?
Gosh, I guess something about LeBron, right?
LeBron or maybe Baker Mayfield. I feel like Baker Mayfield would be the thing I would want to know. Like, are you in or are you out on Baker Mayfield?
Yeah. I would Baker Mayfield, any of the guys, their potential trade targets, I would probably try to stir up rumors about a trade. You know, I've got a lot of family in Buffalo, and people wouldn't stop talking. When was it? Well, last year during training camp, there was all kinds of talk that they were going to trade for Jadeveon Clowney, that the Bills were going to trade for Jadeveon Clowney. Maybe I should have called Bill O'Brien and told him, hey, you might want to ruffle. But of course, that was also Brian Gain was a part of the Bills.
Yeah.
Bills might have been one of the teams that would have offered something respectable for Jadeveon Clowney,
maybe.
But we'll never know.
Maybe.
Because Brian Gain had just been fired by Bill O'Brien.
They traded half their draft for Stephon Diggs. Who knows what they would have given up for Jadeveon Clowney. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the big news out of the NFL yesterday, Seth, is that in a continuation, I guess, of what they did last week when they canceled the Hall of Fame game and you and I were going, well, this is significant. They're canceling things that actually make money for them now as opposed to, you know, canceling OTAs and minicamp. The NFL, and not a very surprising move, by the way. This had been foreshadowed. We talked about it. Maybe 2 days ago that this was coming. But the NFL has lopped off two preseason games. They are lopping off the week one and week four preseason games. So the actual preseason game part of the schedule is going to start a week later. It'll be whoever the Texans were playing in week two. I think it was Minnesota. They're going to play Minnesota and New Orleans in their two preseason games. And to me, that's significant. Two big reasons that's significant. One, I just mentioned, there's money tied to the preseason. Obviously, not nearly as much as the regular season, but a number greater than zero. And this is probably, my guess, Seth, is this means that we've seen our last four-game preseason. My guess is last year was the last four-game preseason we're going to see because we know that the NFL has the opening in the new CBA to create a 17-game regular season starting in 2021, which I think inevitably is going to mean a shorter preseason probably. So say goodbye to your four preseason games, everybody.
So no more four. Yeah, that's right. So, boy, it was last year. We didn't even know it. We should have appreciated it more. We should have savored it.
Should have, as the future practice squad guys of America were running around in week four, we should have sat back and taken it all in a little more.
During that fourth preseason game, it's kind of like I should have just really stopped to smell the roses, pay attention to the fact that I wasn't paying attention to the game.
Right.
Kind of just think about it in the same lines as various haphazard and disappointing sexual experiences you've had along the way, other maybe relationships that didn't work out. Maybe you had a grilled cheese sandwich one ones that pretty much sucked, but you were hungry, so you needed it.
Yeah.
That's all pretty much what these preseason games have felt
like. Right, right, right. Yeah. And now they are no longer the fourth preseason game. My guess is it'll be a two or three game preseason. Now, there are some players who are saying, hey, slow down on thinking that there's going to be two preseason games still. I think it was McManus, the kicker in Denver. Schefter retweeted him. He's like, yeah, there ain't going to be two preseason games. Maybe one, probably zero.
Yeah, so
he's,
there we go.
He's one guy and he's a kicker, but I'm guessing that that's a viable point of view. Like I could see where the NFL, in total caution, don't want to get these guys banging heads with each other until the regular season.
Yeah, and also, just as of note, one more NFL player that can't keep his mouth shut when it comes to offering his opinion about what the team's going to do versus collectively decide, or excuse me, what his teammates and other players are going to do, as opposed to just, letting the NFLPA do its job, right, and work its way through it. We saw this in the labor negotiations. It's one of the reasons that baseball has a better union than football, because us football players who are supposed to be more disciplined can't keep our stupid yaps shut on social media. It's embarrassing, frankly. I'm not even saying this like a Gen Xer talking to a Gen Zer. Yeah. I'm talking about as a football player ashamed that the Gen Z baseball players are better than us at keeping their mouths shut.
Understandable. What's the significance of this from a player's perspective, not having those two? Is there any significance to it?
I think for the younger players, it really sucks. I mean, that's where you get to show that you can be trusted in a game. Yeah. Justin Reed tweeted something yesterday, and I think it was simply know your playbook or study your playbook, something like that. And it really is like the simplest and best advice for rookies. It's to actually know your stuff and don't make mental errors, because then coaches stop trusting you. And in preseason games especially, I think that sometimes coaches are watching almost specifically to see, okay, this guy looks awesome in practice, which is a very artificial condition. How's he going to look in an actual game? And is he going to be able to absorb all this game plan and our defense and everything? And they don't really get a chance to show that. The Texans, for what it's worth, I think partly by design, partly by happenstance, the Texans are kind of well-suited for this and prepared for this, because they don't have a ton of rookies, They traded away a bunch of draft picks. Many of those traded away far before the coronavirus even existed. But still, it's worked out to where perhaps that's a silver lining for the Texans right now, is that they don't have as many rookies to worry about.
It's going to be really interesting when the season starts and guys inevitably forget about the coronavirus. We know from a couple of years ago when the Texans had the most guys on injured reserve in the entire league of any team, guys get hurt during the season. It's going to be interesting to me, Seth, to see how the Texans backfill either guys who get hit with the coronavirus or guys who get injured during the season, because normally it would have been players who were in camp with them who might know some things, might know the playbook, be familiar. It may be now where they're just bringing in guys who they feel like won't screw up on the field, that they're veteran guys that are a little bit more experienced. And along those lines, if you're a rookie coming into the league this year, I would imagine there's a little bit of stress and angst that you're not going to get a really fair look this year because of what's going to happen with training camp. And then what's going to happen is in 2021, it's like you're competing with twice the field. The availability, the pool of players is going to be twice as big because of all the guys coming in from college that you're now competing with.
Yeah, I almost wonder if they make some changes on the fly here during training camp where maybe they say, maybe they'll expand practice squads and active rosters even more. Yeah. To the point almost where you could have, if you got enough guys on your practice squad, you could actually have simulated scrimmages and stuff after practice. Some of these things just to try to develop some of the younger players. At the same time, NFL players are kind of taking it in the butt right now, bite. They're taking a bite out of their butts.
Oh, a bite, okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to mean as the most graphic version of that.
Right, right, right.
They're getting somebody's taking a bite out of their butts with just the revenue they're losing on all of this. Probably $100 million per team if fans aren't allowed at the stadiums during the season. Yeah, it's a lot of money. Now, they can still cover their salaries largely with the TV money, but it's real money, not to mention all the extra expenses we're piling on top of just conducting your business this year.
That's $3.2 billion if you do the math. Yeah. I mean, you're right. That's a big, sweet, wet bite out of a collective butt of the football players, man. That's a lot of money. So there's a conference call today with the players in the league as well. I think the league's going to try as best they can to provide some clarity to the players. Randall Cobb tweeted the other day, that I just got off the phone with a rep from the NFLPA. We're having a player-wide call on Thursday. I would advise everyone to get on this call to hear the plan so you're informed and know what to expect going into camp. You know, all we're going to get off this call, Seth, it's not a public call. It's a private conference call with players. So we'll get anecdotes and things like that from players and little, you know, little news bites. We won't get to hear the call. If you were a player, what do you want to hear from this call today?
I want to know what it's going to look like day one when I show up. Yeah. What are the expectations and what are the first couple days look like? Like the Astros reported yesterday, they're all on a 24 to 48 hour lockdown after they got tested. They got their COVID test, their antibody test, a couple other tests, and now they're just on lockdown until you figure out, okay, who needs to be quarantined and who doesn't. I think it's as simple as that, right? Okay, I'm going to show up with all my stuff. What do I need to have? And I think probably a lot of this might end up being more logistical and educational. I think we're kind of past the point of no return in terms of just opening it up for questions, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to have a Kyrie Irving here amongst the players?
Who knows?
Is there going to be somebody that pipes in and says, hey, by the way, everybody, I don't think we should go back at all.
Seth, there's 1,800 players. You know who I could see doing that? Richard Sherman. I could see Richard Sherman turning into a Kyrie Irving type of influence. Richard Sherman's out there with opinions on Cam Newton's contract that he signed earlier this week. Like, oh, Cam getting, you know, disrespected with this contract. Like, couldn't you see Richard Sherman starting a mini sort of mutiny, maybe too strong a word, but just getting off of that call and not feeling completely comfortable and being very vocal about it?
I guess I would accept that he's a player rep. He still is the player rep for the 49ers, right? Or he's on the executive council.
I have no idea, but he was talking about how horrible the CBA was when it was going down. So
yeah, I don't know. It seems like we would have heard some grumblings about that already, but we didn't really hear grumblings from Kyrie.
Kyrie got on the call and was fine with everything and then started going to his teammates saying, "Man, this thing stinks."
Oh, that's,
you know,
right.
Like,
that's,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, like he, so
look, no, one thing I've noticed is that Sean, is if nobody's messing with your paycheck, the leagues in which the paychecks haven't been messed with, things have been pretty copacetic. The league, where the paychecks got messed with a lot, baseball, it was really, really
ugly. It got testy. Apparently, some NFL teams are considering a big change to how they handle game weekends during the season. And speaking of players not being happy, some players not happy about this. We'll talk about it next. As the NFL gets ready to resume sometime, hopefully in September, regular season, this is an idea that Peter King floated a couple of months ago, and Mike Florio ran with it a couple of days ago, and I think it's an idea that it got a little bit of reaction from current players, and I certainly want to get the reaction of the former player with which I do a show. The planning for the 2020 NFL season includes a revolutionary and risky approach to traveling to road games. Per a league source, this is Mike Florio reporting, multiple teams intend to fly to and from road games on the day of the game. It's an idea that has been percolating for a while. Peter King floated it a few months ago, and it could be a reality. I'm kind of mad we didn't bring this up with McClain yesterday to get his reaction to see how dumb he thinks this is. Florio admits there surely will be limitations. The 49ers play at the Jets in week two, for example. It wouldn't be practical to fly across country to play a game and then fly back. And if you take a look at the Texans schedule, Seth, I look at this idea and I go, yeah, I don't
think, you know,
so.
It's a dumb idea, even if you're flying up to Dallas. Yeah. It's a really bad idea for a lot of reasons. And if it was considered a few months ago, it'll have been shot down really, really quickly. Now, if you have to do it because of extreme circumstances, like remember there was a snowstorm a few years ago? It was, I think it was a game into Pittsburgh. Somebody had to fly into Pittsburgh the day of the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to do it, you have to do it. But the problem is you're about to go play, let's say you're a defensive back, and you're about to go try to cover Julio Jones for a noon game, 1 o'clock Eastern. Okay, well, that means you got to get up at 4 a.m. to be sure you leave by 6 a.m. to handle the two-hour flight. Plus, realistically, you probably got to make it even more because you got to handle delays, mechanical issues potentially, all these other things. And you're doing that immediately before you're trying to cover Julio Jones, which, by the way, the vast majority of the teams in the NFL do not fly in fancy jets. They fly charters where most of the players sit and coach. And the offensive linemen are crammed in with an open middle seat, but your knees are kind of crammed up. So you're flying within a cabin altitude of 8,000 feet, which reduces your oxygen levels. It dehydrates you. Your body gets stiffer. And it's just a dumb idea when you're going, you're spending millions of dollars on players' salary, but you're trying to put them in the worst possible physical state they can be in immediately before they go to play a really good football team. I don't think the good teams will do this. I think the Bengals will do this. I think penny pinching teams will do this. But if you look at the best team in the league over the last two decades, the Patriots spend on things that matter. Their facilities are not all that cushy or nice. They're kind of Spartan, right? But they'll spend on things that matter. The Patriots were the first team to actually buy their own team plane. They retrofitted everything so basically all the seats are first class so guys can sit comfortably and everything. And this isn't a matter of players complaining about, oh, these conditions are horrendous. It's simply, okay, how can I be in the best shape to do my job? And frankly, the amount of hassle that it takes to get a hotel ready is minimal compared to the performance deficit you'd get from flying 6 to 8 times a year the day of the game. This would be a horrendously awful idea, Sean. This would be, if this was brought up in brainstorming sessions, you know when you're doing a brainstorming session, mm-hmm. and you're the guy at the whiteboard and yeah. you're writing everything down, and the number one rule of brainstorming is we don't judge any of these ideas, right?
That's right.
This is the one you have to stifle your reaction on. Oh, when somebody says, hey, we should fly in the day of the game, you're like, okay, let's write that down, and then on to the next one.
And then you just quietly never listen to that person's ideas ever again.
Well, no, I mean brainstorming. Yeah, you should have some bad ideas thrown out there. It's not a bad brainstorming idea.
I got you.
But I feel like when Peter King reported it was still in the brainstorming session.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering what exactly it prevents if they were to do this. Because, Seth, if I'm not mistaken, do you guys, even for home games, stay in a hotel the night before the game?
Yeah. Okay. Well, some teams do. Some teams have, like with Kubiak, the veterans were allowed to go home
the night before
the game.
Yeah.
Which is, it's frankly, I liked having the routine of going to the hotel, especially because if you have people visiting, you don't feel any pressure to entertain them at all or anything. When you're back at your house, you just go to the hotel and it's game mode.
Yeah, I preface this the same way you do by saying I'm no epidemiologist, but to me, it feels like the big risk with road games is the airplane, not the hotel. Because the hotel, you can deep clean and get it ready for your arrival, and it's a quasi bubble when you're there and so forth. It's the getting on the plane and being in a hermetically sealed tube for 3 or 4 hours with other people, and you're, you know, hopefully with masks on, but you know, all it takes is one. You know?
I saw one doctor saying, and this is interesting. He said he'd be more worried about the airport itself than the airplane because the airplanes, a lot of them, and I would imagine the ones the NFL will be on, would insist on having the HEPA filters. So that air is, it's recirculated, but it's recirculated with filtration. So that's probably a lot safer than a lot of other indoor areas that you might be in, especially if guys are wearing masks and everything.
Yeah. Just for, I guess, to apply a real-life example to this idea of teams flying to road games on the day of the game, the Texans have 8 road games. One of them is the opener in Kansas City. That's a night game, a Thursday night game to open the season. I would assume you want to be in, you know, you want to get a good night's sleep before that game. The rest of their games, other than the Week 15 game against the Colts, which is a TBD right now, a TBD road game, the other 6 games all start at noon, except for the Detroit game, which starts at 11:30 a.m. because it's on Thanksgiving Day. You can't fly to Pittsburgh at 5:30 in the morning for a noon kickoff. You can't fly to Cleveland at 4:30 in the morning for a noon kickoff. It's a ridiculous idea.
Plus, so it might happen every now and then, especially for night games.
Yeah.
For night games, I could see where you have time to recoup and you know, rejuvenate yourself after you get down. I think that a lot of guys, though, also use that night before the game. That's when they really catch up on their sleep, you know. And I know everybody loves to have the image of, oh, these players are so raring to go that they can't sleep and they're tossing
it's
and turning.
Not true.
Some guys sleep really well. What's individual? It's like everything else. Some guys sleep really well, and some guys will sleep right up until it's time for breakfast, and then they'll go back to sleep for another hour. Like those guys, I need those guys especially to be sure they're getting their sleep. Because those generally aren't the guys that are going to be responsible enough to like, oh, well, okay, we've got an early morning on Sunday, so I better be sure I'm to bed by 7 p.m. on Thursday night.
Yeah.
It doesn't generally work that way.
I would advise against morning radio in their future as well if they're that kind of person. The key to a deep Rockets playoff run speaks about being the key to a deep Rockets playoff run. That's next.
Yeah, we have as good a chance to win this as anybody, and you never know how. I mean, it's going to be different. The environment's going to be different. Getting prepared for it's different. But we will attack it with the best that we can, knowledge-wise. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to big players making big plays, and it's always that way. We've got two of the best, if not more. I mean, and I don't want to put everything on those two because you got Eric and PJ and Daniel House and the Cove and just keep going on. But we can make the big plays, the big moments. We can beat anybody there, without a doubt.
That's Mike D'Antoni talking about the Rockets' chances of winning it all. And, yeah, I mean, Seth, look, so many teams probably kind of know what to expect, but there's such unknown with how teams are going to react to being off for 3 or 4 months of basketball. And the Rockets probably more than any team because they had just sort of implemented, I mean, they gave their team a complete facelift right in the middle of the regular season and changed their style of play. So Mike D'Antoni's probably looking at this in some ways almost like a fan, you know, where he's like, man, I'm kind of anxious to see what we got. We got two of the best players in the league and let the chips fall where they may kind of thing.
Well, this is where, even though it's taken a few years to get here, I think D'Antoni and Morey, I think at times during their career, they've both felt like they have pretty aggressive notions of what they'd like to do in a basketball game or with a basketball team, but it's always held back by convention. It's always held back by a little bit of fear, either from the front office or from the players themselves. I feel like this year, they finally, by way of getting rid of Capella, are in this situation where both of them probably feel like, you know what, nothing can stop us right now because we don't even have the personnel to play conventionally. We are going to just try to be the fastest, scariest offense possible, and we're going to figure out ways to play defense. But this will go back to like D'Antoni and what he wanted to do in Phoenix in the early 2000s. He's actually getting to do it right now.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's in the most experimental of NBA seasons where anything could happen. I think it's fitting that almost the Rockets might be the perfect team, and they're the most experimental team that the league has seen in decades.
Yeah, along those lines, Mike D'Antoni talked about the advantage that the Rockets may have over their opponents.
One advantage that we do have over other teams is that there's no other team that changed their philosophy and players at All-Star break. We're the only ones that haven't had a preseason or had a training camp. So we're going to treat it as training camp and get back to the basics and what our philosophy is, and being able, obviously, with the conditioning is a big part of it. But I think we can get, you know, Robert Covington, Jeff Green, guys that are going to play significant minutes and get them indoctrinated in how we play. We want to tweak some things, play faster. We want to move the ball a little bit better. We want to have guys honed after 3 weeks. We'll use 8 games to get ready for the playoffs.
Mike D'Antoni on the advantage the Rockets have. We should mention here, Seth, he mentioned Jeff Green's name. I forgot Jeff Green was on the Rockets. Boy, the Damari Carroll's on the Rockets. I got to get my mind right and get reacquainted with this roster because I'm just thinking, I think of the core group all the time. I think of Harden and Westbrook, obviously. PJ Tucker, sort of the heart of the team. I even forget about Covington from time to time. And then obviously Eric Gordon is, as you and I talked about yesterday, and we're going to hear from Eric Gordon here in just a second. Eric Gordon is the X factor for this team. If Eric Gordon's knocking down his threes because he's going to get a lot of good looks with James Harden and Russell Westbrook drawing attention. If he's knocking those down and if he's in shape and he's giving you things on both ends of the floor, because Gordon's a pretty underrated defender as well. We remember the Utah series last year where they put Gordon on Donovan Mitchell, and that's when they kind of locked up that series, was when Gordon did some things at the defensive end of the floor. Gordon is obviously a really big X factor as well.
Yeah. Thabo Sefolosha is gone. I don't know if you needed a reminder of various people that are or not on the team. Thabo Sefolosha and his 10.6 minutes per game are outie. Luke Bamute,
back.
The prince of Cameroon, the fresh prince of Cameroon, is back.
Yeah.
He is an actual prince, you know, Sean.
He's an actual prince? Like coming to America? Does he have his own money with his face on it, like Eddie Murphy?
He says it's much less glamorous than that.
Okay.
And it's more of a localized thing. His father, I don't want to say this improperly because that's the kind of soundbite that goes out and sounds like you're being like incredibly insensitive.
Right.
He didn't start playing basketball until he was 12 years old. He was raised and lives in Yawande. He has a really close relationship with the town of Biamese. This is the town where his father, Camille Mota Abidiadas, is the chieftain, and where Luke is a prince. So his father is the chieftain and a government official. So I guess Luke is like the prince of a city.
Okay.
He says it's NBD. He has to go every now and then to some ceremonies and stuff, but he's certainly not Eddie Murphy in Coming to America.
Dude, that name rolled right off of your tongue. That was impressive.
Oh, that's pretty good because I butchered it. That's in no way.
Okay.
That in no way resembles the letters that I'm looking at on the screen.
Okay, yeah,
right,
but fake it till you make it because it sounded like you've been living there your whole life and walking in and having meetings with the guy. Like,
yeah.
That was impressive.
That's right. I was envoy to the village of
you're the American ambassador to Uwanda or whatever it was. So, Mbamute, and hopefully, you know, Seth, hopefully the shoulder is better than the last time we saw Mbamute on the floor for the Rockets 2 years ago in the playoffs, where he couldn't raise his arms above his shoulders and therefore couldn't make layups.
It was probably, and it remains kind of one of the undertold stories of that playoffs, right? Mbamute was a much bigger factor on the Rockets at that point than a lot of people would have realized. And when his shoulder wasn't working, certain parts of the Rockets' defense stopped working.
And the offense. His range didn't shrink to 3 feet, you know, around the rim. His range shrank to he couldn't score the basketball at all. Like, he couldn't lift his arms and make layups. So, Mbamute, if you're just waking up with us, Thabo Sefolosha, probably no longer with the Rockets anymore either because he was just here on a 1 year deal, but he's opting out of the bubble in Orlando. The Rockets have swapped him out for Mbamute, so he is back with the team. Here is Eric Gordon on being the X factor for the Rockets.
I always make it tough on myself to bring it, you know, every single game, you know, even in the playoffs. I definitely don't like to let down. I always bring it to the table, but it's all about us collectively as a team, you know. I just know when I do well, of course, for sure the team does well, and I want to do well every single game. And I just want to do that and be consistent with that at all times.
It is uncanny, the direct correlation to Eric Gordon's performance with the results of this team. It's strange because he's the third or fourth best player on the team. But I guess that comes from Seth, maybe the first two guys on their team. I don't think you can say that the same thing with James, for example, or certainly Russ, where you go, well, if they're knocking down their threes, the team wins, and if they're not, they lose. Because James and Russ find other ways to affect the game. The main way Eric Gordon impacts the game for the Rockets, and he's a versatile player. He's got a lot to his skill set, but it's knocking down open shots. You know, if he's not knocking down open shots, then all the attention James and Russ are drawing is really for naught. If he's not knocking down open shots and PJ Tucker's not knocking down those corner threes, that's when things get gunked up for the Rockets.
Well, This particular team, right, is the same way it is every year in the NBA, and particularly with the Rockets. So much of it is, what's it going to look like in the final 4 minutes of the fourth quarter of a playoff basketball game?
Yeah.
And with, you know, in the regular season, you could have just Westbrook or just Harden on the court at any given time. Sometimes your guys are hitting your threes, sometimes they aren't. And you end up amassing a whole bunch of wins. But what happens to Westbrook and him kind of adapting to the flow of the game in the fourth quarter? What happens to Harden and perhaps some of the mistakes he's made in the past versus potentially maybe taking another step forward in the fourth quarter of the playoffs? That's the great unknown. That's why I'm grateful for this season, because we get to skip past all of the annoying parts of the regular season where you're saying, hey, well, let's see what happens when we get to the playoffs. We only have 8 games to wait until the playoffs now.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's great. I guess from that standpoint, Seth, you're right. Most of the games boil down to crunch time, end of games. I think with this Rockets team, I'm just thinking about, okay, when was the last time I felt great about the Rockets' chances of winning a title? It was 2 years ago when they went 65-17 in the regular season and maybe should have won the title if Chris Paul had stayed healthy. The thing that I liked about that team, and the reason why I thought that team could beat Golden State, is that I felt like that team could get stops in the last 2 minutes of games. I felt like they had a lot of different permutations of players. If you wanted to go big and have Capella out there, you could. They had some athleticism on the wings, but you were a good enough defensive team to with Trevor Ariza out there who could cover really anybody on the floor. Chris Paul was, even though he was older, he was a, at the very least a willing defensive player and still a good defensive player. That team could get stops in the last 2 minutes of games. I don't know how I feel about this team being able to get stops, especially against certain teams, in the last 2 minutes of games. I'm much more concerned about that end of the floor in crunch time than I am their ability to get buckets at crunch time.
I think with this team, I almost want to flip everything you know about basketball on its head because it's such a counterintuitive team. Yeah. And what do we usually say in basketball that makes you feel like you're an old school smart guy? You're like, well, actually, you know, the best way to get your offense started is with your defense.
Right.
You know, get up and get some boards, get started, whatever. You get a stop, you get a turnover, and all of a sudden you got the fast break. You got to focus on defense because you control that. That'll start your offense. I almost feel like the counterintuitive thing that might work with this team is, hey, okay, you know, you're not chock full of great defenders and you're small as hell. So maybe your best defense is to wear those guys out with when they're on defense. And that by having a blitzkrieg 6 seconds or less flying around the court attack all the time, then you tire the opponent's legs out and it minimizes their ability to play offense.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a way, isn't the way that Harden and Westbrook and Gordon, if we're talking about Gordon here, the way they've been handling the pandemic maybe a tell for that kind of thing?
Yeah.
That the extreme conditioning that these guys have gone through, where we've heard stories of Gordon losing 10 or 12 pounds. We've seen videos of Russ getting after it. James, I mean, of all the players during the pandemic whose pandemic routine has been scrutinized and discussed, James Harden is the clear number one. That has been, of all the players, Seth, that where people have been talking about what are they doing to get ready for the restart, James Harden's number one on the list of what people have been talking about. And so maybe that's a tell into what the discussions were when the pandemic hit, where I'm sure D'Antoni, maybe Daryl Morey, got with the team or certainly got with the leaders on the team and said, okay, here's what we learned from these 14 or 15 games. What we learned is our way to win a championship is going to be, to your point a minute ago, Seth, is to run teams out of the gym.
Yeah.
So you better be ready to run teams out of the gym.
Lance Armstrong, when he was training and pushing drugs on the rest of his team for the Tour de France,
yeah,
their whole thing was they wanted to look like vampires. They wanted to be so gaunt that they just crushed the mountains. Like, they wanted to be so light that they would just be like feathers floating up a mountain on their bike, on top of their bikes. And I think that just from the pictures I've seen of Harden, he looks a little bit like a vampire. Like, he looks a little gaunt, you know? And you're going to lose some power. He's a good post defender, which nobody outside of the city of Houston ever wants to acknowledge. But one of the reasons that the Rockets can switch as much as they do is that Harden can defend down in the post. And I don't know how much of that he's going to lose with less body weight, but he's going to have to make up for it with movement on the offensive side.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, Thabo Sefolosha opting out, I don't think it's a big deal. The Rockets back to him with Luke and Bob Mute. Seth, I don't know that – I haven't heard anybody else from the Rockets even flirting with the idea of opting out of Orlando. The only prominent player that still I've seen stories of being on the fence – is Victor Oladipo from Indiana, which impacts the Rockets not at all because Indiana is a 5 seed over in the East. Are there any Houston athletes, basketball, baseball, football, that you're worried about opting out of their respective sports because of the COVID?
Nobody jumps immediately to mind. I feel like the COVID affects the lungs and perhaps Laremy Tunsil's lungs are burnt out from all the harsh weed he gas masked in college. I don't know. Does that make him more susceptible? Perhaps. But I don't. He doesn't seem like he's the opting out type. I think he's ready to play. He's always so eager to play, in fact, that he jumps off sides pretty much every other play.
Yeah, he loves playing football.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, 18 people on the text line. It's a false start.
It's a false start. Okay. Offsides is a defense.
It's very important for you to feel like you're – yes, exactly.
That's where you can go, I know I jumped off sides several times when I was a player. I was a defensive lineman.
Encroachment if you need to. Nick Martin. You want Nick Martin? Nick Martin's got to be...
Hold up. Nick Martin, the tough, smart, dependable... The epitome of tough, smart, dependable?
He's a tough, smart, and dependable looter. So I think for when the looting begins, he wants to be sure that he's out at all the fitness centers snatching up all the equipment that he can. It's like he stole Bill O'Brien trying to frame Nick Martin... as a do-gooder when he was in fact looting NRG's weight room during the initial stages of the pandemic.
So the Texans offensive line could get gutted because of Tunsil's weed smoking 4 years ago and Nick Martin's desire to snag free workout equipment.
Yes, these are the things that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, Nick Martin, the most physically fitness conscious looter of all time. Everybody else is stealing iPhones and iPads and all kinds of technology, and Nick Martin's got a Bowflex and he's running down the street.
Poor Nick Martin. Poor Nick Martin's gotten more crap for like doing a good thing than anybody ever. Other than maybe, I don't know, I guess the British soldiers that hated Gandhi, I guess. So Nick Martin basically one step below Gandhi and he's getting nothing but hate for it.
I don't know. If I were an NBA player, I'm reading this article about the conference call that the NBA and the NBAPA have the virtual meetings they've been holding with the 22 teams set to resume. And Sham Sharanya of The Athletic details some of the aspects of the bubble that he's pulled from multiple sources who are on those conference calls. This sounds delightful if you were to go to Disney for like a week or two. I get where being in the same place for 2 months could even a fi- I know this is going to sound crazy and it's going to sound hashtag first world problems. But I think anytime you're anywhere, even the lap of luxury for 6 or 7 weeks and you're looking at the same things every day and you're cooped up, that can wear on you. Even in a luxurious spot. That said, this sounds really, really nice, the campus they're putting together.
Upon arrival to the campus, players will undergo a 36 to 48-hour quarantine. So that's a little bit longer than what Major League Baseball players are doing with their own little mini bubbles.
Yeah.
But this is what will be available to them. Food and beverages.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Entertainment. What if they said all this other stuff, but no food, no beverages?
You bring over a tray with a big piece of bread and a cup of water on it. Here you go. Yeah.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Actually, by the way, that's the same quarantine. The 36 to 48 screwed me up. That's what the Astros are doing, 24 to 48.
Gotcha.
So, so they're going to have food and beverages. Entertainment, including fire sticks, gaming, and hookups.
God, I thought you were going to say hookers.
Yeah, that's why. Probably not going to publicize that part of it.
Yeah.
Wellness resources, events, and health applications. They're going to have an app on their phone.
Okay.
It's called NBA Campus. It's a 24/7 service for players and members of the traveling party in Orlando to have access to food delivery, concierge, barbers, scheduling workouts, and more. Sean, you know what this sounds like? This sounds a little bit like Pablo Escobar's prison when he was quote unquote imprisoned, but basically had the run of the place.
Right.
Like he was imprisoned because for political purposes, the government had to imprison him, but he turned that prison into his mansion. So he wasn't allowed to leave or anything, but he had all kinds of awesome stuff trucked into him all the time. That's a little bit what this is like. It's going to be a party with all your bros for a while.
So before you feel bad for the players, just know that if one of them wakes up at 4:30 in the morning and wants a haircut, boom, pull out their phone, open up the app, and they can get a haircut at 4:30 in the morning. A couple of the other facets on here that Sham Sharanya found out about the NBA bubble. Players able to leave the bubble for a family emergency but must be tested every day still and have a 4-day self-quarantine upon reentry.
Yeah.
So there's that. Disney staff on campus will be allowed to go home, but the league and union, and I think this is a real key here, Seth, this is an underrated key. If there are blind spots or Achilles heels to this plan, it's the guys who are not, or guys and women who are not part of the NBA employment, the guys who are serving them, the staff, they are working right now on a testing protocol for Disney staff members.
Yeah, so I guess that's, you don't want to import the coronavirus into your pristine Escobar bubble.
Right.
There's one thing that hasn't been decided yet, Sean, and that this is very important as it relates to the Rockets. And it's this. They apparently haven't decided whether they're going to reset the technical foul on the year. Now, Russell Westbrook leads the NBA with technical fouls. Yes. I think he's at 13 right now.
He's getting close.
Remember, when you get to a certain level, then you start getting suspended. So this is critical. I think if there's one thing that we need to lobby for, it's that they go ahead and reset the technical foul counter.
Yeah, I think I vote for resetting it. Just to, and, you know, and I would... And I would say that even if Russell Westbrook weren't on the Rockets. You know, I just think it's the right thing to do. It seems fair.
This is such a weird – for one, you're not just finishing out the season. You're starting an eight-game season with nothing but playoff teams on there. No little bum teams here that you can sit back and not get fouls.
This is how many technical fouls Russell Westbrook had and how much was left of the season still for him to get a one-game suspension for getting too many. Is it you and I at one point, Seth, in February and March, were pulling out the schedule to find out when the Rockets had back-to-backs? Because Russ rests one half of all the back-to-backs anyways. So yeah. we were looking to see how he could manipulate intentionally getting a technical foul on one of the games of a back-to-back so that his one-game suspension would be served at a time where he would, you know, normally be sitting anyways. That's how many technical fouls he has. So, I vote reset. Reset on the technical fouls, I say.
Unless I get, but then the question is, okay, but then is there a really low tolerance? Or are you only allowed like four? Or it would be even fewer than four. It would really only be a couple of technical fouls.
Maybe,
before all of a sudden, who knows?
Yeah. The other thing is there will be no fans in attendance, but the NBA will have virtual screens around the arena to provide an enhanced feel for television audiences.
Right, and I saw that, and I wasn't quite sure what they were talking about, whether it meant, okay, are they going to have screens up with images of fans, and how is that really going to look, actually? And then I found this video of Adam Silver back in February, back before we even really weren't even thinking about coronavirus. He was doing this presentation in an auditorium, and he basically turned the auditorium into a virtual arena where it felt like you were in the middle of an NBA game. And I think that this is what they're probably going to try to emulate on the court. So where you've got images of fans in the stands and whatnot, and the players feel like they're at an NBA game, and then presumably on television, it's going to look like you're at an NBA game too. Yeah. I'm all for this.
Yeah, I'm for experimenting with anything when it comes to the production of these games. And you know, these Korean baseball games that they put on ESPN with no crowd, they've been piping in sort of baseball noises in the games, and it works. I'm kind of surprised. Like, when a guy hits a home run, they play a little crowd noise on the TV broadcast, and it doesn't feel as cheesy as I thought it would. It normalizes the game a little bit, so we'll see. Seth, did you see what the total cost of the bubble is for the NBA to be functioning this thing for 2 months?
Is it $300 million?
No.
$150 million.
$150 million. The NBA is paying all food, beverage, travel, hotel rooms, testing for the coronavirus. All in $150 million.
That's not bad, right? I don't know. I have no idea what the. If you had told me to guess, I would have guessed maybe it would be $50 million or so. I feel like a few opportunistic contractors have probably screwed the NBA over on some of this stuff. Like at the time. Maybe ESPN or Disney World, who's a partner with the NBA, might have been like, well, where else are you going to get this, my friends? In a state where the governor is open to committing to allowing this right from the get-go, you're not going to find this anywhere else. So maybe $50 million you can play on our facility.
We're talking about literally billions of dollars of TV revenue that's at stake. I don't know how many billions, but it's billions. It's in the even if it were $1 billion. Then $150 million as a cost of doing business is a worthwhile endeavor. If this is the only way that you can do it, or it's the safest way to do it.
It does make me wonder, okay, you've got about 25% as many players in basketball as you do in football. Do you, on active rosters, could the NFL have done this for $600 million? Seems like it would have gotten, it would be like an exponential growth type thing. Things get way more complicated.
Yes.
So probably not.
Yep. And it's easier to find basketball courts than football stadiums too, I think.
Yeah.
In one city. All right. Speaking of football, storylines in the AFC South, including the Texans' position battle to watch once training camp gets here. It's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.